Welcome to the Deputy Mayor for Planning and Economic Development Roundtable. I'm Acting Deputy Mayor John Falcicchio. Today, we're discussing a topic that's on the top of mind for many district businesses, and that's the Payroll Protection Program, also known as PPP. As you know, the initial round of PPP funding authorized in March is being extended by federal legislation. And with me today, we have a number of guests and a special guest speaker to talk about the PPP program. We're recording this on Friday, April 24th, and the legislation is headed to President Trump's desk for signature, and we expect the program will open up soon. So I want to tell you a little bit about who's with us this morning. We have Dan Martini, who's the Vice President of Congressional Relations and Public Affairs of the American Bankers Association. He'll give us an update and an overview of what we can expect on PPP in the second round. And on the funding that the Congress just authorized. And then Director Christy Whitfield, with the Director of the Department of Small Local Business Development, Ward 5 Councilmember and Chair Pro Tem of the Council, Kenny McDuffie, and Corey Griffin, the Chairman of the Greater Washington Black Chamber of Commerce. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today, and I will turn it to Dan, who will present on the PPP program.
Great. Thank you so much, John. And thank you to you and the mayor's office for the opportunity to participate in this roundtable today. Thank you to the other esteemed panelists as well for letting me share your time. What I'm going to do is go through an overview of the Paycheck Protection Program, basically functionally how it works from sort of a borrower perspective. And then we can certainly have question and answer later. I know there's some specific questions that we need to address. So these slides that you'll be seeing, I'll be asking to move through as we go. But basically, the SBA's Paycheck Protection Program, after today's Friday the 24th signing, will increase the funds up to $670 billion for 100% guaranteed loans that can cover payroll costs, interest on mortgage payments, rent obligations, and utilities. The program runs through June 30th of 2020, though we anticipate the funding to be exhausted much quicker than that since April 24th. As you know, the first wave of funds was signed into law on March 27th. Program opened April 3rd, and then the first wave ended on April 15th. Second wave has $320 billion, which was approved yesterday by Congress, and it's expected to be signed today by the president into law. This program, broadly speaking, and I know there are several technical differences or exceptions here, but broadly speaking, the program applies to businesses with fewer than 500 employees, businesses that meet certain SBA size standards, independent contractors, sole proprietorships, self-employed, and certain nonprofits such as 501c3s, veteran-owned 501c19s, and certain tribal concerns. There's a vastly expanded lender base in this program. Traditionally, the SBA program only has about 1,800 lenders nationwide. This program has approximately 5,000 and growing. And in the DC region specifically, statistics I saw from the Small Business Administration yesterday peg the number of participating lenders in this area within the District of Columbia at about 300, and I would anticipate that grows. So if I can figure out here. So moving on to slide number two, some more of the finer points of this program and how it works. For the loan size, it is the maximum of either 250% of your average monthly payroll cost or $10 million, whichever is smaller. Regardless of which financial institution you go to, all of your loan terms in terms of duration are going to be the same. So it's a two-year loan with a fixed interest rate of 1%. And again, that is either 250% of your monthly average payroll costs if you're a business. If you are an independent contractor or sole proprietorship, it is a little bit different, which I will get into later in my presentation. In addition to these loan terms, you as a borrower are allowed up to 6 months of deferment on loan payments. So that means that you won't have to start making loan payments until month 7, and then the payments will be month 7 through month 24. as part of this, the first 8 weeks of the loan, so it's the clock starts the day you get the loan, and those first 8 weeks, you can spend money on certain covered expenses, which I'll get into, and that amount will be forgiven by SBA, and the borrower won't have to pay that money back. It'll just be treated as indebtedness. There is a breakdown in that area of 75% needing to be spent on payroll costs and 25% needing to be spent on other things such as mortgage interest, rent, utilities, and debt obligations. So just keep that in mind that this is the Paycheck Protection Program. So it is designed to protect paychecks and keep people on salary and keep people employed. So next slide. This is a portion of the presentation where I slide into kind of what you need to do as a borrower for those that maybe have not already applied for a PPP loan. So what documents do you need to provide a lender? So you must submit documentation to establish your eligibility. So things that could be included in that, and again, I'm going to say up front, make sure you check with your specific lender about what forms they need. But as you're getting ready to apply for a loan, these are good things to have ready to go. The lender may require more paperwork, may require less, but this is generally speaking what we have seen needed in previous applications that we've heard from our membership. So what documentation do you need? Payroll processor records, if available, payroll tax filings, Form 1099 if you're an independent contractor, or if you're a sole proprietor, you would need your 2019 Schedule C form. Business owners who do not have such documentation may need to provide other documentation, such as bank records, basically establishing the payroll cost amount for your average monthly payroll for the past year, so for 2019. The reason being that is going to be that times 2.5 is the size of your loan. In addition to that information, you also need to submit SBA Form 2483, which is the Paycheck Protection Program application form. That form is located on SBA's website, so sba.gov. If you navigate to the Paycheck Protection Program section of that website, all of these forms will be available for you there. But for you as a borrower, Form 2483 is probably the most important, as that is your basically cover application, and then you have all your supporting documentation behind it. So slide four, what is the loan size calculation? So this is kind of a breakdown of step-by-step of what you would need to do, broadly speaking, to calculate how big your loan likely will be. Again, I would encourage you to work with your lender, or if you have somebody on staff, or if you have an accountant that you work with, they are also likely able to provide you help in doing these calculations. So step one, aggregate payroll costs from the last 12 months for employees whose principal place of residence is in the United States. Subtract any compensation paid to an employee in excess of an annual salary of $100,000 and or amounts paid to an independent contractor or sole proprietor in excess of $100,000 per year. So basically, if you were to have an employee that was making, say, $120,000 a year, you would just lower that salary to $100,000 for purposes of this calculation. Next, you calculate the average monthly payroll cost, so dividing step two by 12 months. You want to then multiply the average monthly payroll cost from step three by 2.5, which is the payroll multiplier in the PPP loan program. And then step five, if any of you have received an economic injury disaster loan or EIDL made between January 31st, 2020 and April 3rd, 2020, you want to add that outstanding amount in, because you would refinance the EIDL loan into the PPP loan, and then subtract any sort of advance that you would have received under EIDL. So the EIDL program was for a time providing $10,000 cash advances up front when you applied. That program has since run out of money, though I'm going to talk about it later, about where it stands now. But just know that if you received an EIDL loan between January 31st and the start of the PPP loan program, you're going to need to refinance that into the PPP loan. So next slide, slide five, how do you determine payroll costs? So payroll costs broadly, and again, this is just sort of the broad parameters, work with your lender. Our payroll costs broadly are compensation to employees with principal residence in the U.S. That means salary, wages, commissions, or similar compensation. Cash tips are the equivalent based on employee or records of past tips, or in the absence of such records, a reasonable good faith employer estimate of such tips. Additionally, payroll costs include payment for vacation, parental, family, medical, or sick leave, separation costs, and then payment for the provision of employee benefits consisting of group health care coverage, including insurance premiums and retirements, as well as payment of state and local taxes assessed on the compensation of employees. So a lot of different criteria there that go into that bucket of payroll costs. Next slide, slide six. For an independent contractor or sole proprietor, it's a little bit different because you are by yourself. So you would want to have your 1099 as an independent contractor. That would be sort of the determination of your payroll costs. For a sole proprietor, you would want to use Schedule C, which you need your 2019 Schedule C. If you don't have that yet, I would encourage you to get it. Doesn't mean you have to file your taxes, but you need at least some sort of documentation to apply for this loan. Additionally, we have a payroll cost look-back period that you will need to use. If you own a seasonal business, you can use the average monthly payroll for the period between February 15th or March 1st of 2019, and then to June 30th, 2019. So it's the same look-back period from which this current program is running. If you weren't in business last year or even enough to get to 12 months, what you can do is look at the average monthly payroll cost for January 1st through February 29th of this year. Again, that is something to keep in mind. Slide seven. To calculate your number of employees. Now, this is important because the forgiveness portion of your loan is going to be determined by, in part, by your ability to rehire employees. Broadly speaking, if you have, say, 10 employees prior to it, during your average look-back period of last year, and then at February 15th, which is the start of the window this year, you only have eight employees, you would need to bring your staff back up to 10 employees by June 30th in order to qualify in part for loan forgiveness. So this employee calculation basically is there for determining how many people you need to have on staff by the end of this period here in June 30th. So generally speaking, business owners may use the average employment over the same time period from last year to determine the number of employees, or you can use SBA's usual calculation, which is average number of employees per pay period in the 12 completed calendar months prior to the application date. However, remember again, if you haven't been in business for 12 months, the average number of employees for each pay period is the bit during which the business has been operational. That is the calculation you should use. So moving to slide eight, what expenses can you, or what are covered expenses in a PPP loan? So basically this gets to, you have applied for the loan, you've done the payroll calculation, you've received your money from your lender. What can you spend the money on? So payroll costs, costs related to the continuation of group health care benefits during the period of paid sick, medical, family, or insurance premiums. That is the largest bucket. Those two costs right there, you need to spend 75% of the first 8 weeks on those buckets, those first two. So payroll costs and costs related to health care, paid sick, family leave, et cetera, if you are hoping to get the full possible loan forgiveness amount when you apply for that. The remaining 25% of your spending should be or can be on mortgage interest payments, rent payments, utility payments, or interest payments on any other debt obligations that were incurred before February 15th of 2020. So again, this is the Paycheck Protection Program that SBA is administering, that the Congress has created, and their intent was to spend money on the employees. So 75% of the money spent, at least in that first 8 weeks, needs to be on payroll costs and other employee-related costs, not on rent or utility or things like that. So moving to slide 9, wanted to touch on the difference between an economic injury disaster loan and the Paycheck Protection Program loan, or PPP loan. The reason being is there are a couple different federally sponsored options here that you as a borrower can take advantage of. So PPP loan, as a reminder, it is 2.5 times your monthly average monthly payroll cost. That's the size of the loan. It's a 2-year term at a fixed 1% interest rate. 75% of it has to be used on payroll costs, and the remaining 25% can be used on mortgage, interest, rent, utilities, and other debt obligation, interest on other debt obligations. So it's kind of a finite bucket of expenses you can use that money for. For an economic injury disaster loan, that is done directly through the SBA. They generally have a 30 fixed year term of an interest rate of 3.75%, and you can get up to $2 million. Additionally, as part of this program, businesses that apply for an EIDL can receive up to a $10,000 cash advance within 3 days of applying. As you can imagine, the demand for EIDL loans outstripped the actual ability of SBA to process these loans. So as a result, we saw previously loan advances much smaller, say about $1,000. And then the maximum loan size is not anywhere near $2 million. So just keep that in mind if you're going to apply for an EIDL. It's ultimately up to the SBA to determine the size of your loan and how much of a cash advance you would receive. But again, an EIDL loan can be used for things beyond just those 5 buckets of a PPP loan. If you wanted to make capital expenditures, buy new equipment, you can do that under EIDL, but you would not be able to do that under PPP. So for EIDL, if that's something you're interested in, you apply directly through the SBA. They have an application on their website at sba.gov/disaster. That's sba.gov/disaster. Okay, moving on to slide 10. So related back to the PPP program, you want to find how you want to find an available lender, right? If you haven't already applied. So there's a couple different options now that have since been updated, even since I finished these slides yesterday. So SBA has a find an eligible lender tool on their website, which takes you to a map. You enter in your zip code or surrounding zip code here in DC, and it'll plug in all of the lenders that are participating in the program in this area. Additionally, SBA also just released data last night that is now on their website as well of lenders by state. So it's a giant 563-page document, but if you go to page 86, you'll see all of the lenders that are currently participating in Washington, D.C. It doesn't have contact information on there, but it does have the over 300 lenders that are participating in Washington. So you might be able to see if your bank is on there or if another good one that you've heard of is there as well, and you can reach out and contact them. Now, there's been a lot of confusion around whether you have to go to your own existing lender or to somebody else. Initially, I believe the program was there's nothing in the law that says you have to go to your own lender. However, because of some of the regulatory requirements around knowing your customer, providing certain document information to a lender, for speed purposes, an existing relationship actually works faster by about 1 to 2 days. And that's just strictly from a processing standpoint, because you, a lender needs to make sure you are who you say you are and that you are, in fact, the business you claim to be. So that just adds time to a loan, and I think that's where some of the confusion came in initially, where you had the Secretary of the Treasury saying, go to your existing lender. To be clear, you do not have to apply through your own lender, especially if your own lender is not taking applications. Just know that it may add a bit of time to your application if you go to a new financial institution or new bank, credit union, what have you, that you are not a current customer. So just keep that in mind. And then finally, on slide 11 here, I don't know if these slides will be available for download. So just in case they are not, the links that I have listed here are will send you to all of the forms, all of the guidance you would need as a borrower to fill out an application, to apply to a lender, and to work through the loan process. So Treasury, if you go to treasury.gov, there's a link in red right up top that sends you directly to their Assistance for Small Businesses page. It's got all of the relevant forms you would need as a borrower to apply for a loan. If you can't find them there, you can go to SBA.gov and go to their Paycheck Protection Program site. That will also have all of the forms there. And then finally, if you're interested in receiving or applying for an economic injury disaster loan, which is again run directly through SBA, you would want to go to sba.gov/disaster. That is the site where SBA is administering that specific loan program. If you want a PPP loan, you would go through a bank, a credit union, or another authorized financial institution. And again, just a very quick disclaimer, presentation was provided as a helpful guide to assist small businesses interested in participating in the program. Always rely on the latest government guidance in determining whether you're actually available. And I would also encourage you to work with your lender on making sure that you are eligible before you apply. There aren't any criminal penalties per se, but a lot of the certification you have to do to receive one of these loans or to apply for one of these loans, the onus is placed on the borrower. So I would encourage you to consult guidance and also to speak with your lender, your accountant if you have one, or possibly an attorney, just to make sure that you as a business can receive, or an independent contractor or a self-employed can receive a loan. So with that, I believe that's the end of my slides. Yep, and so happy to turn it back over to John and the esteemed panel, and then certainly am available to answer questions.
Great, well thank you Dan for that. And really we did wanna have this as a session so that business owners knew how to navigate PPP. So this is a helpful way for them to view it and hopefully use some of the resources you highlighted in order to navigate the program and also the economic injury disaster loan program as well. But I want to turn it over to the panelists. So I'll go to Christy first, just to get some of your reaction to this and kind of the guidance that you're giving to small business as well.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So, you know, at DSLBD, of course, we know that access to capital is essential for small businesses and that, you know, that in normal business circumstances, it usually doesn't traditionally make sense to layer debt onto a distressed business. You know, it's not a kind of good traditional sense, but we also know that these are anything but normal times. And so, you know, we really want to make sure, and at DSLBD, that we're trying to focus people's attention on the resources that are currently available at the SBA. Because the EDIL and the PPD are two of the most affordable types of resources that are currently available to the small business community. You know, we know that access to capital is one of the best options for our small business community right now. You know, the smallest businesses are having challenges getting money, you know, and in that uncertain time with shutdown orders and when we're not certain when we're going to be back to a new normal, and candidly even what a new normal will look like when we come back into a new marketplace, you know, what that's going to look like. We need patient capital and we need to be able to have the time to do that planning. You know, so DSLBD has been working with the SBA to make sure that we can get as many people in line for these business, you know, these opportunities as possible. You know, it bears repeating, and I hope people know this, that Mayor Bowser, you know, was very proactive in getting Washington, D.C. first in line for the assistance at the SBA. And so we were the first city in the region to be in line for the EDIL help. Now, I know that businesses will be watching and they will be saying, you know, and we'll be talking about this, and this will be one of my questions for our panelists. This money was oversubscribed the second that it was out there. And, you know, a lot of our smaller businesses did not get a bite at this apple. You know, and these issues are real. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't still be working to make sure that you are getting in line for these resources. You know, DSLBD and our team is actually working in partnership and able to help people walk through some of the pieces of these applications. You know, they're not always easy, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be doing it. You know, I want to also make sure that people realize that in addition to the resources that we'll be putting out there, that, you know, there have been really long wait times to get some of the help, and that there are humans at the end of the phone lines at DSLBD at 727-3900, hit option 7. And, you know, if we're not answering, we will actually call you back and help you through some of the questions. Now, we are not the experts, and that's really for the EDIL, but we can also help you find the resources to get you in contact and help you figure out, you know, who is the closest SBA lender, you know, that might be able to help you get a PPP. You know, if you don't have a relationship with a lender, who's the closest lender, you know, that might be able to help you get that PPP loan. You know, we all read in the paper that these big businesses were getting those getting these big loans, and these are real problems. If you're a small business that doesn't have a relationship with your lender, you know, advice we want to say is start building those relationships now. When these resources open back up, we need you to be having those relationships and getting yourselves in line. The final thing I'll say before we sort of go down the line is that we are hearing about offers and, you know, candidly scams, like, hey, for $500 we can guarantee you get a PPP. None of that is real. And so understand that if you see something that for a price you can get a PPP loan, that none of that is real. So again, you know, DSLBD is here to help you make sure that we can help you get access to those resources. Right. You know, the CDFIs in our city are going to be having access to that, and we're trying to make sure that we're working with our local lenders to help the smaller businesses have access to these resources, because we know the smaller businesses need these loans too, and, you know, and DSLBD is here to help.
Great. Councilmember McDuffie, in addition to being the Ward 5 councilmember and the chair pro tem, you're also the chair of the council's Business and Economic Development Committee. I'm sure that means you hear from more than a few business owners. What are you hearing, and how are folks navigating these different programs?
Sure. First of all, good morning. Let me thank the mayor and thank you, Deputy Mayor Falcicchio, for convening this very important discussion, to Director Whitfield, Corey Griffin, for being here as well. Dan, that was a great presentation, a lot of helpful information. I have to say, as we sit here, I'm looking at how far apart we are, and you know, it's really a part of the new normal that we're experiencing throughout this global pandemic. And as we all know at this table and understand very well, this crisis is unprecedented. The distancing measures that are in place are absolutely necessary. But what I'm hearing from small businesses is that the reality of where we are in this public health emergency is really devastating to their businesses and to our local economy. It's made it extremely difficult for people to be able to provide for themselves and their families during this pandemic. And I was reading recently a report from the Brookings Institution where they mentioned one in four businesses will likely close before this recovery is over. And for people who are a part of this, who are experiencing this, it's a very stark reality. And as chair, as you mentioned, Deputy Mayor, as I'm chair of the Council's Committee on Business and Economic Development, I've been working really hard. My staff and I, my colleagues, have been doing everything we can, working around the clock to support small businesses here in the District of Columbia, and in particular, looking at some of the situations experienced by minority-owned, women-owned small businesses as well. We've passed, working with the mayor, working with you all, what's now a series of emergency measures to protect residents and small businesses here in the District of Columbia. And I'll mention just a few of the measures that have been included that I think are important to our local small businesses. They've included a microgrant program, which you are administering with your team, $25 million that the mayor set aside. We deferred sales taxes for a period of time for a hotel. We expanded unemployment. And, you know, we had a max of about $444 at DOES. With the help of the CARES program, we've got an additional $600 that those who avail themselves of unemployment district would be able to access, which, you know, I've already heard from a lot of residents who said that is extraordinarily helpful. We've got some mortgage deferral provisions. We also increased subcontracting requirements from 35% with CBEs to 50% throughout the course of this public health emergency. And also, the mayor now has authority under the most recent measure to do advanced payments for contractors to help with cash flow. And so we've done a number of things. But despite our best efforts locally, the reality is that in order to really navigate throughout this pandemic and really look toward a strong recovery, you know, the District of Columbia, not unlike other jurisdictions, are really going to have to rely on the resources and investments in the federal government, not unlike the PPP program that we're here to talk about today. And while the District of Columbia, I think, has somewhere around 80,000 small businesses, we know from the data that the SBA produced that only about 3,253 loans from the first round of PPP went to DC businesses. That's a lot of businesses that are out there hurting who have not gotten access to this much needed capital. So, you know, taking steps to include our local community development financial institutions in a more robust way as the pandemic relief assistance programs become available, I think would help to ensure that funds reach those who are most in need. Our local CDFIs know many of our minority and women-owned businesses better than many of the large financial institutions currently administering the program through the federal government. And so I think that is going to be important. I think there's some aspects of the most recent bill that the president will hopefully sign today should try to address that. I'm going to continue to work with you, Deputy Mayor, with Director Whitfield and Black Chamber of Commerce, and others, my colleagues at the council, to make sure that we're getting as many resources locally to small businesses here in the District of Columbia, and obviously trying to make sure that those small businesses understand and avail themselves of these federal resources, which are incredibly important. But we also need to be mindful of the disparities that existed even before this pandemic started, because they haven't gone anywhere. And we have to be intentional in the efforts that we put in place not to exacerbate them as we navigate the recovery. So again, thank you for this discussion.
No, Councilmember, and with one of the many roles and functions you have as the chair of the committee is you do oversight. So you are expert at asking questions. Why don't we break it up a little bit and jump in with
sure.
Dan, see if there's any questions that you had for Dan about how folks can navigate the
program. Yeah, absolutely. I know one of the things that I've appreciated, and I think residents have appreciated in District of Columbia over the last several years, is how far along we've gotten with our restaurant industry. Very robust hospitality, tourism, restaurant industry in the District of Columbia, and some small businesses like restaurants and other gathering places anticipate that they will not be able to meet the June 30th rehire deadline given the stay-at-home orders that everybody's experiencing and the staggered reopenings of our economy. And as Dan went through his presentation and mentioned that June 30th date, this makes the grant option for businesses like restaurants likely unattainable. What are, if any, recommendations might you have, Dan, for these types of businesses who may not necessarily be in a position to take on any additional new debt and perhaps are a little nervous about whether they would be able to access a very important program like the Paycheck Protection Program?
Yeah, that's a great question. And as a DC resident myself, for the last 14 years, I've loved and really enjoyed seeing the restaurant scene and gathering places scene grow. I think it's been great for DC, just as a personal aside. Regarding what to do around not wanting to take on additional debt, and the fact that they may not be able to use the PPP. As you said, PPP, or as I mentioned earlier, PPP is designed to be used now. It's a program meant to bring employees back. So one option for restaurants that are possibly doing takeout, carryout services might be for them to bring staff back to man that. I know there's an interplay between sort of the unemployment compensation debate and then having folks back on staff, particularly if there's not anything to do or if they're tipped wages and they're not making tips. So PPP, as you said, may not be the best option for them. However, it is just one tool, albeit a large one in the toolbox. So other programs that might be available for them, I know it's debt related, but EIDL, with the cash advance, that's possible, specifically if they want to use it more for payments towards keeping the lights on, paying the rent, things related to that. I would also encourage them to potentially reach out to Congresswoman Holmes Norton. I know there are a lot of other federal resources available that her staff has been working on to compile, and that may be an option to check there. From an existing bank relationship, I think most of the products would be in the form of loans, either SBA 7A loans, which also carry a guarantee, or PPP, or a new program called the Main Street Lending Program, which is another option that they can pursue. But again, that's more debt-based. So practically speaking, if they want to use PPP, they could bring staff back now. That would count, even though the staff wouldn't necessarily be doing anything. When I say bring staff back, I think there's a lot of misinformation about physically having to be back in store. That isn't a requirement at all, a part of PPP. So if you are, you have restaurant staff, you can bring them back on, but you could remain closed and just be paying their salary as opposed to them taking unemployment compensation. So that might be an option as well. I think there's a misnomer around what being open for purposes of PPP really means.
Helpful. Corey, so you are the chair of the Black Chamber of Commerce, but also a business person yourself. How do you see folks sort of navigating these different programs, and what kind of guidance do you think they need from Dan and other folks who are watching this every day?
Thanks, Deputy Mayor, and thank you, Director Whitfield, and my council member, McDuffie. A couple things. One, let me start by just framing up the Greater Washington Black Chamber of Commerce and why we exist. We started about a year ago, really with the idea that we wanted to do several things. One, recognize, honor and celebrate the black businesses and the legacy that they have had here in the District of Columbia. We have a very proud legacy, as you well know. And we quickly sort of got to sort of the mission of our work, which was really about focusing on access, connection, focusing on the equity, which I think we've been talking about in roundabout ways here. And then obviously focusing on the growth and expansion of our businesses here in the district. This COVID crisis has really suffered our businesses. You may have recently read a few articles about a few of our businesses. One, Ben's Chili Bowl. I think the story that was in the paper recently is gut-wrenching. And then Kith and Kin, a newer business, who is also suffering significantly down at the wharf. So we are really focused on providing technical assistance to our membership in this time, supported by our U.S. Black Chamber. And because we were very proud of the fact that we had a growing business membership, we were really beginning to shape our agenda around what we could offer to them by way of the things that we've discussed. So we want to just lift up that many of our businesses are suffering significantly. In terms of what we're, the guidance that we're providing to our membership, we're really focusing on trying to help them understand these programs. We recognize significantly that there are impediments that have been sort of institutional and legacy. For instance, on this data point alone, Stanford reports that about 1% of black-owned businesses actually start with a loan, an institutional loan. And so there is a capital crisis for us throughout the existence of our from startup to operations. And now, of course, we have this real challenge of getting access to the funding. We were happy to see the money committed in this, I think they're calling it phase 3.5 of this CARES Act, to commit some dollars, I think it's about $30 billion or so, to MDIs and CDFIs, which is where many of our businesses will more likely be able to find the assistance that they need to get access to these programs. I will tell you that as a business owner, thank you, John, for mentioning that, I'm a proud CBE here in the city. And I myself applied for the PPP loan. It was rather daunting. And this was with a large institution. While I think they took fairly good care of me, or at least attempted to, I feel like I'm in a very long queue. And I feel like the sort of personal service that you need in this moment, it's going to be difficult to get. And of course, like many others, my application went in later than the dollars were available. So I first got a note that indicated that the money had was no longer available, and then I got a second note that said I had a deficient application, needed to provide some additional documentation. So there are many challenges, right? Many small businesses. Many black businesses and others, quite frankly, if you are a small business, you might not, as an owner, pay yourself, right? You may defer compensation, and so you have to be able to provide documentation to the lender, to the bank, to prove that you are eligible for the program. So there are many different impediments, and so we're trying to help our members to think through that. We're asking them to prepare their documentation in advance of going to the sites. Because many of them will time out and kick you out, and you sort of are in this constant loop. We're asking them to reach out to banking relationships, if they have them, to get advice around the best approach to the access to these programs. And then really just helping them through sort of offering some level of counseling around it, right? I mean, because you've got people who are absolutely devastated, and we're hearing from them. And trying to do our very best to provide support around that. So we will continue to advocate to the city government and to the extent we can to the federal government to have a particular focus on the interest around black businesses. We have a unique set of circumstances and require some additional attention, so we'll continue to do that.
And when you talk to fellow business owners, what's kind of a common question about like the PPP program? Is it that waiting in the queue and having things ready, or what are folks like concerned about when trying to access the program?
Yeah, I'd say it probably is the notion of having a banking relationship, right? I mean, if you just on its face, you might consider, well, do you really know your banker? If you bank at a large institution, I mean, what is that relation? What's the context of a banking relationship, right? As growing up, I remember watching some of the 70s shows about bankers, and people would have a relationship with their banker. They'd walk in to an institution and say, hey, John. So I'm not sure that that's the context for a lot of our businesses. And so what we're really trying to help them to do and ask and respond to the questions that they have around what really is a banking relationship. Is it because I do business there, I make deposits there? Or do I need to have had a relationship where I'm sitting across with a banker to do a loan at some point? And I was doing some reading, interestingly enough, there's an incredible article in the New York Times on this very subject. And there's a woman in Baltimore who was told by her institution that she really didn't have a banking relationship with them, although she had sort of a debit card or a credit card. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't meet the standard for some, and perhaps there isn't a standard, right, of having a banking institution yeah. and so or relationship. And of course, she would have to go to different places to try to find what meets a definition.
Yeah, Dan, how do you advise folks to navigate that? Because it's kind of hard to set up a relationship in these days where you can't necessarily walk into the bank. And really, how do you establish a relationship through an 800 number?
Yeah, that's a great question, and honestly, one that our industry is struggling to deal with as well. You have to remember this program, the timing of how quickly this program was stood up and how quickly the money expired, and also how little guidance the federal government actually provided financial institutions. It was an imperfect rollout, to say the least, right? I'll answer the question in a second, but just wanted to also provide some background and facts around sort of the new phase 3.5 and then also some of the loans that were actually made in phase one, just to kind of counteract some of the stories being reported in the press about favorable treatment for larger institutions. So phase 3.5 does have at least $30 billion, that's a floor, not a ceiling, set aside for CDFIs, MDIs, and community banks with under $10 billion in assets. So I would anticipate those being a source of that folks should actually rely upon to go and speak with. I know it's going to have, again, there are people, I think it was Christy that mentioned earlier, but there are people on the other side of those 800 lines, particularly with a smaller community bank. So it may take some time. They're all at work from home as well, or a lot of them are, just because of safety considerations. So having just a little bit of persistence there, I think, is helpful. In terms of some stats from the previous wave of money, 1.66 million loans. So there's 30 million available small businesses out there, eligible small businesses out there. So a fraction of these businesses actually received money. That said, the average loan size was $206,000. 74% of the loans that were made were under $150,000. One of the facts that I really like to point out is 60% of the loans that were approved came from these sub $10 billion banks. So your MDIs, your community banks, your CDFIs, they made 60% of those loans of the entire $350 billion pot. So I'm hopeful that they will continue to make these loans and move forward. I think also another thing to keep in mind related to sort of that inability to get in to speak with someone is that our membership also basically was administering the program at the same time that borrowers were trying to apply. What I mean is that the government basically just said, okay, we signed a bill into law on Friday the 27th. 7 days later, we were live. We were building the airplane while it was in the middle of the air. So I think for this time around, it should be a lot smoother. For one, you have more lenders that are in the system, and two, you have lenders that were successful in the last round. To a local bank, Capital Bank has a really good story that was in Bloomberg the other day. They have more experience. They know what to expect moving forward, so they may be able to take on additional non-customers. They may be more outward focused and outward facing and trying to help those businesses and establish new relationships there. So to bring it back, what I would advise those people that are stuck calling the 800 number and feel really frustrated is that our members understand we're a part of the community as well. We're here for the borrowers. It's the sheer volume of the program, and we're all in it together, and we're all pushing to get the loans out as quickly as we can and to businesses that need them.
Corey, so you shared your experience navigating PPP. So you heard back from your bank that the funding had run out. Then you heard back that the application needed more information. Now, did they allow you to submit the more information for when the program opened back up? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I think their guidance was, we find your application to be deficient because you haven't paid yourself this year. And we can't, we need to show payroll taxes. You need documentation to show payroll taxes, which was a little bit seemed to be in conflict with the guidance that SBA or the bill provides, such that you are able to show some other level of documentation about your earnings. And so what they encouraged, the bank encouraged that we resubmit. We either provide the documentation that they've requested, or resubmit your application under some other conditions. So, it was mostly a form letter, but they encouraged us to continue to seek out the PPP through this application process.
Right. And so, go ahead, Dan.
John, am I able to jump in there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and Corey, I really appreciate you sharing your story and understand the frustration with the additional required documentation that your financial institution asked for. Just to comment on that, the program started very broad. It didn't have a lot of the technical information. SBA, Treasury did not put out a lot of technical information up front. So I think what you're seeing as the program moves along, as they are adding additional requirements in, those are then applied to the program moving forward. So it might be a situation there where the bank is having difficulty interpreting the guidance, or the guidance has changed and SBA and Treasury have released sort of new standards. So I totally understand the frustration. Just wanted to provide maybe a little context of where the bank is in interpreting, trying to interpret this government-run program.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. And I agree with you. I've heard from many folks who are getting different guidance from their specific banks. So that's consistent with what you've offered.
Dan, this is Christy. We were given the guidance that, people who had been in the queue should sort of sit tight, and that the next tranche of funding would sort of be addressed to the people that were already in the queue. And is that the same information that you're hearing? And then I guess it's kind of a two-part question, because then my question is, at DSLBD, we are still talking to people. We know the need continues. And, what hope then is there for the leagues of people that continue to need additional resources? We know there are tons, scores of people already in line then. And what hope there is there for someone that hasn't even put an application in yet?
Yeah, so great questions. I would say for those, there's a couple technical things. If you are in the queue, or if you have received information from your bank that your application was processed and it has an SBA number, but you haven't gotten your money yet, which I know a lot of individuals and businesses have not because of the processing, you are part of that first tranche. So if you already got approved, you already got an SBA number, you're part of the first tranche. If you didn't make that cut and you're in a queue at a bank, that is when this program goes live again, and we're not sure, this is, again, Friday, April 24th, it'll be sometime in soon after the president signs the bill into law. If you're in a bank queue, they will need to then go in and physically upload your information application into the E-Trans system. Related to the larger question of what happens, because we know the money's going to run out quickly again, I would talk to your banker, talk to your lender, talk to a new relationship as soon as you can. I know that's not the best option, but it's the one that we have. If the funds do run out, or when they run out, I think there's going to be enormous pressure on Congress to replenish the fund again. So the issue there, though, is I don't know when that will happen. So I'm not able to paint a rosy picture per se, but just know that if you already have an application mm-hmm. into the bank, those banks are going to fight to put those applications into the system. It's an imperfect system, as it's first come, first serve. So it's really just get into the queue as soon as you can, And just have we have to kind of hope that Congress comes back with additional funds because this money will run out.
But I guess then the queue is the SBA queue.
Yes.
And then making sure that you are getting clear information from your bank that your application has been submitted to the actual SBA. So being in a
yes.
queue at your bank doesn't really mean anything if it hasn't been submitted to the SBA.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's like a
pre-holding, until you hear from
pre-holding,
your... Sorry, go ahead.
It's like a pre-holding chamber at your bank until they submit it to the actual SBA. Doesn't mean anything until you're at the SBA.
Yes, and the reason why the banks are having to hold the applications right now and aren't physically able to enter them into SBA's system is because of regulation. It's the Anti-Deficiency Act. SBA is legally not allowed to take and queue loans in their system, so those applications are being held by banks. And just anecdotally, so the bill was signed into law Thursday, or excuse me, the bill was passed Thursday evening by Congress. It's going to be signed into law Friday, the 24th.
Mm-hmm.
I had talked to bankers all night, overnight, asking when is E-Tran going to be back online? When is SBA's system going to be back online? So our members are trying to be ready. They are going to be ready to upload these applications into the system as soon as it goes back on. So just know that we're anxiously awaiting as well because we want to serve our customers.
Dan, this is Councilmember McDuffie, and Director Whitfield raises a great point about what being in the queue actually means. And listening to Corey's story and his experience with the PPP program leads me to wonder, because you've got so many small businesses out there who want to be able to avail themselves of this program. It's a great program. On the other hand, it requires a lot of information, right? And so if you're a small mm-hmm. business and you don't have, an accountant and you don't, have the resources necessarily to be able to pull together the information as quickly as some larger businesses, then by the time you get to your bank, it's important for you to understand that just being at your bank and applying there doesn't mean that you're necessarily in the SBA queue. So in your understanding of the program, the PPP program, is there any portion of the $30 billion or so that's being allocated at a minimum for the community-based lenders, can any of that be used for technical assistance specifically to perhaps get some of these smaller businesses, these less resource businesses to the point where their application is going submitted to the SBA and it's in the queue, or is all that money strictly for processing loans? Is there any flexibility around that?
So all of the money in the $320 billion, that is for the grant for the loans themselves. That said, the CARES Act does have additional, the CARES Act was the bill that passed about a month ago now. It had additional money in there for SBDCs, as well as for the Office of Advocacy of SBA. So in terms of technical assistance, I would maybe look to those two options as places where you can go to potentially get some information and help on how to compile these relevant forms. We are working within the rules that Congress has given us and the guidance that SBA has provided. So we're kind of limited to what resources they've made available for us, and then certainly what your financial institution can kind of help you walk you through. And even the smaller community banks, I know an issue there is related to just sheer volume and the ability to process. So SBDC, SBA Office of Advocacy might have some resources available. Certainly, I would also point to some of the other trade associations out in the world. There are, the U.S. Chamber has a really good information center on their website that has a bunch of documents about that will walk you through step by step on what you need as a borrower to apply and what documentation you need to provide. And then there is the CPAs Trade Association as well, AICPA, which also on their website has guidance there related to documentations that the borrower needs. So there are publicly available resources, and then in terms of like having somebody help you maybe actually walk you through step by step, if you don't have to do it on your own, I would point to Office of Advocacy and SBDCs.
Yeah, Corey, please.
Deputy Mayor, just to since the council member touched on the subject of capacity, interestingly enough, to add a little color to my story, I got an email yesterday from my accountant. She's lost her job at an accounting firm. So consider that, if you will, if people are also not available, resources are not available around accounting services. She was happy to offer to me 2 weeks ago, just let me know what you need. So I was able to get all of the documentation I needed from her in advance of her being laid off. But I mean, that's a real challenge. And it is these kinds of things that really make it that much more difficult for a lot of small businesses, which 100% of our membership happens to be small business.
Well, definitely, and that's very trying, challenge that folks will have as they try to reach out to the folks that they do have that relationship with. They're challenged as well at this point too. There are a couple of SBA technical assistance centers in DC, so I wanna make sure that folks know about that resource. There's also the Main Streets that Christy's shop funds and helps keep going. And then, of course, Christy, you wanna give out your phone number again for—
Right, so 727-3900, option 7. You know, and then we also are partnering with SBA, and when the social distancing ends, we also host one of the SBDC counselors in our office. But we have a partnership with them. They're also at various places around the city, Howard University and the different places around the city. So there are places to help. So if you're in a Main Street, call your Main Street director, and they can also try and walk you through. There's a lot of social distancing that can help do it, but the stark reality is that this is like tick tock. This is a timing game, right? Because by the time you get that help, somebody that has that help has gotten it, and so then And this is why equity, this is why the mayor has folded equity into the conversation around the dirt. Because, access and equity, get vetted out in so many different ways. And while the smallest among us, is striving to stay alive, those that have sort of natural institutional access sort of see the will bending towards their future. Other people that are struggling just sort of see doors closing again and again. And this is why we have to keep having these conversations, because it just seems like, we have to keep shining a light on these problems.
Absolutely. And with that, timing is an issue, even for us gathered here. Dan, any final comments? And then Councilmember, I'll go to you as well.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to thank Deputy Mayor and the Councilman and Corey and Christy and everybody on the panel for the opportunity to speak with you today. To provide this resource moving forward. I know we've talked a lot about how the even the second round of funding is likely going to run out moving forward, but what I wanted to reemphasize is that PPP is just one tool in the toolbox, and banks have been helping customers before the social distancing started and before businesses were closing, and will continue to do so after. So please know that despite some of the frustrations, problems related with this program, that you do have an ally in the financial community, and we will continue to work to help get small businesses back on their feet and then become successful moving forward. So really appreciate the opportunity to talk with everybody today.
Yeah, no, I want to thank Dan for that presentation. I thought it was extremely helpful. Deputy Mayor Falcicchio, for you all for coordinating this. I'll just say that, as we try to continue to navigate our way through this pandemic and toward recovery, we want to use the resources we have locally, the limited resources that we have locally, to help as many small businesses as possible. You truly are the backbone of our local economy. We know you're struggling right now, and we want to help you see your way through this. But we also want you to know about the federal programs that exist and the resources that are there to assist as well. And so Even though we're in a pandemic currently, the government is still open. There are agencies that are still out here to help, and as Director Whitfield mentioned, there's still resources at the Department of Small Local Business Development. So please continue to think through and reach out for assistance. We're here to help, and we're going to get through this together.
Definitely. Thank you, Councilmember, and thank you, Christy, Corey, and Dan for being a part of this today. Mayor Bowser set up the District Economic Recovery Team in order to get out information about the resources that are available. So I want to make sure that everybody goes to the coronavirus.dc.gov website and look for the recovery page. On that page, we'll post Dan's presentation along with the links that are in it, as well as some other helpful information. I do want to say that as trying of a time as this is, no entrepreneur started their business because they thought it was the easiest way to get a paycheck. They did it because they knew they can deliver a good or a service in a better way. And so use that spirit to get us through this together. And we know that there are a couple important things that we want everybody to do. One, stay healthy. That's so important as we try to get through this pandemic. Two, have hope because we're going to get through this together. And then third, make yourself educated and learn about the programs and the resources that are available, like PPP and other programs that we'll list on the coronavirus.dc.gov page. So on behalf of the team in DempEd and Mayor Bowser, thank you for watching and thanks for listening today.